Welcome to On the Money. We're here to delve into your finance questions and unpack the jargon around business, banks, and big bickies. On the Money is coming to you nationally through the Community Radio Network. On the Money, the buck stops with us. I'm your host, Catherine Zangerer. This week on The Money...
They will want to convey that they're exercising caution, that they've got everything under control.
Will they or won't they? The RBA is set to make another announcement on interest rates. Some economists say they won't cut further because it could push housing prices up. Others say they should to stimulate flagging business investment figures. We'll speak to economist Timo Henkel from the ANU's Research School of Economics for his view. Also on the show...
The government has shown a complete lack of insight and understanding of what the problem is.
What will the government do about unemployment? Figures have hit a 12-year high and they're much worse for young people. We'll find out about the push for Work for the Dole to be privatised and where the youth unemployment hotspots are. That's coming up. You're on the Money. When the Reserve Bank met in February, they made the call to cut interest rates by 25 basis points to a 40-year low of 2.25%. It was a decision that raised alarms with the business community across the country. While homeowners were celebrating the cut to their mortgage repayments, business leaders worried it was a sign of a weak economy getting weaker. On Tuesday, the RBA will meet to decide whether to cut interest rates again. While some see this as good news for stimulating business, others are worried it could push bulging housing prices up. Dr. Timo Henkel is a research fellow at the ANU's Research School of Economics. I caught up with him to find out which way he thinks the RBA will go.
I suspect that the RBA will keep interest rates on hold, given that they reduced interest rates in the last round, and that was for the first time in 18 months. They will probably want to wait for a little more data to come in. They did get some confirmation of some weakness in the Australian economy through the labour market data that came out in the last couple of weeks, in particular the high unemployment rate of 6.4% and also the muted wage growth, which means that real wages in terms of purchasing power are actually pretty much stagnant at the moment. So there are signs of weakness, but I think that the RBA will probably want to hold out for another month or two and await further confirmation of the economy's weakness before they decide to lower rates further.
Could you articulate what the concerns are about the housing market in particular if the Reserve Bank was to cut interest rates further?
House prices typically depend on credits being extended because most people, when they buy a house, don't buy a house outright but need to borrow the funds in order to purchase a house. So when you make the borrowing costs cheaper, people take on more debt. When they take on more debt, they will then buy more houses or bid for the existing stock of houses more generously and thereby push up house prices. And that, of course, is a problem, is that when people take on more debt and that pushes up house prices, at some stage the cost of borrowing may well rise again as the economy improves, but people are then still saddled with the high debt that they took on when the borrowing costs were reasonably cheap, and they will find it more difficult to make ends meet. So when economists worry about asset prices, it's not just housing, but it's actually also equity and bonds and other assets that people might pile into, that even includes wine or paintings and other artwork. It's that people buy these limited goods with debt, and the debt remains fixed in nominal terms. And when the borrowing costs rise again as the economy improves, the bottom line for households or firms as well becomes more severe or weaker, and that causes problems.
All right, looking more broadly, those business investment forecasts that were weak were particularly weak in the non-mining sector. This points to the fact that as an economy nationally, we haven't really found a way out of that reliance on commodity prices and on mining in particular, have we?
No, not yet. Now, we shouldn't expect the rebalancing of the economy to go about smoothly, one would expect that there are going to be hiccups along the way. It can be a painful process because not only does it require investment spending, for example, to shift from the mining sector to other sectors of the economy, but there may be some major dislocations. It may severely affect the labor market. It may mean that people have to move from the mining states back to Victoria and New South Wales or other states, depending on where the economy is picking up. So I wouldn't place too much emphasis on sort of monthly sentiment reports, but I think it's pretty clear that, you know, the rebalancing of the Australian economy is underway. I don't know where it's going to lead exactly. It's by no means at an end, and up to this point, yes, the Australian economy is still pretty reliant in terms of its living standards on the mining sector. So even though the prices of the commodities that we export have fallen dramatically over the last 12 to 18 months, in volume terms, we're still exporting a fair bit because, of course, much of the investment that's taken place over the last 5 years is now coming online. So we still benefit from the commodity boom, and that is okay, but the rebalancing will have to continue, and that will not happen smoothly. There will be bumps along the way.
I guess the Reserve Bank in its deliberations will have to also consider what impact politically and in terms of the message about the Australian economy a decision to cut rates would have. Do you think that's something that they'll be worried about, that if they cut interest rates further that it sends a message that the Australian economy is particularly weak?
I think so, yes. That's always a concern for central banks because it is not just the price that they're setting for overnight interest rates, that's the interbank rate, but there's a huge amount of communication that's involved to the financial markets and the economy or the citizens more generally. And I think you're right when you say that another interest rate cut, which would imply two interest rate cuts in succession, may well signal to the markets and the Australian citizens that the RBA is very pessimistic about the economy, and it may make households and firms perhaps reassess the situation and revise their own forecast down more than they would have done otherwise. That's certainly something the RBA will want to consider. It'll want to obviously do the right thing for the economy, setting the right price, but at the same time, it doesn't want to spook the markets. It wants to convey a certain amount of confidence, and that will imply that it doesn't want to seem to be panicking about the current state of the economy.
Australians are already cautious, aren't they? Because even though household consumption has picked up since 2013, it's still below average. So doesn't that imply that people are being careful about how they're spending their money?
Certainly they are careful about how they're spending their money. It's natural that they are. They took on a lot of debt over the last 15 years. They've tried to deleverage a little bit, and they've mostly done so successfully.
Can you explain what deleveraging means?
Just deleveraging means that they're paying off debt rather than taking on more debt. They're also noticing that their real household incomes are not really making leaps and bounds at the moment, at least not at the same rates as they used to 5 years ago at the height of the mining boom. Given those circumstances, they are going to be more cautious. They're going to be more concerned about how much they spend, and that's, for each household, the prudent thing to do. That said, the consumer sentiment indexes seem to be bouncing around a little bit. They're not great by no means, but they're also not really bad. In fact, last month, the Westpac Consumer Sentiment Index jumped up a fair bit. But again, I'd be cautious about reading too much into the month-by-month changes. Overall, they're somewhere in the middle of the road. They ought to be better, but they're not terrible.
So do you think that perhaps when the Reserve Bank meets tomorrow that they will be cautious about another interest rate cut, but maybe perhaps foreshadow that that might happen sometime down the track if things don't improve?
Correct. I think that's what they'll want to do. I think they'll want to wait for some more data. They will want to convey that they're exercising caution, that they've got everything under control. Reducing rates yet again would probably send a slightly panicky signal to the financial markets, even though some financial market players are anticipating a further rate cut. But they will want to, at the same time, communicate to the markets that they stand ready to do whatever it takes down the track if there are clear signs of further deterioration in the Australian economy.
Dr. Timo Henkel is a research fellow at the ANU's Research School of Economics.
the money. Ride the gravy train with us.
You're with me, Catherine Zenger, on the money. Now to the issue of unemployment, in particular youth unemployment. The Bureau of Statistics has released figures showing unemployment has reached 6.4%, the highest level since 2003. For young people, the statistics are much worse, at an average of 14.2%, the highest level since April 1998. And for those aged 15 to 19, unemployment hit 20.3% in February. So what's to be done? Social Services Minister Scott Morrison is still pushing the government's plan to force unemployed people under 30 to wait 6 months to receive Centrelink benefits. Then they have to do 6 months of work for the dole. Now the private sector thinks they have the answer. Evan Wallace reports.
The Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry has proposed expanding the Work for the Dole program for young people to the private sector. So what exactly is the solution to addressing youth unemployment in Australia?
There's an emerging crisis in youth unemployment in this country. If we don't do something new and different to get young people back into meaningful work, we're going to have an intergenerational problem on our hands. What we are suggesting is an extension of the old Work for the Dole process.
That's John Osborne, Director of Economics and Industry Policy at the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. As it stands, the Work for the Dole program only allows young people aged between 15 to 29 to work for either government organisations or the not-for-profit sector. So what's not working about the current system?
The key here is that they're real jobs. They're not make-work jobs. We're encouraging young people, particularly young people with rising youth unemployment, back into the labour market, ensuring that they have the sort of skills that are necessary, you know, wearing a uniform, showing up on time, or whatever it might be. These skills and these experiences are very useful for both the employer and the employee.
Eamon Waterford, the Policy and Youth Advocacy Director for Youth Action, doesn't agree.
This is a terrible idea. The idea that Work for the Dole should be provided to private for-profit companies is not only a really, really bad policy outcome, but also a blatant cash grab by the business sector.
On the Money put this concern to John Osborne. Now, John, some people might say that this is just an approach to drive down the wages that businesses are required to pay. How would you respond to that?
Oh, absolutely not. It's critically important for a scheme like this to work. It's not a difficult thing at all to have appropriate safeguard measures which ensure that these jobs are not replacing the jobs of anyone who is currently working or would work, but adding on to the top.
So, is an expanded version of the Work for the Dole program the best way of addressing youth unemployment? We spoke to Jeff Borland, an economics professor at the University of Melbourne, to find out.
Well, I think it's partly a good idea. I think the best programs for giving young people the capacity to work and get back into work are programs that provide real job skills and provide a potential pathway into a permanent job. And I think that's where the private sector has an advantage in being able to provide those types of opportunities. I think the difficulty, though, with this specific proposal, it's really just a proposal to pay employers the money that would have otherwise been paid to a Work for the Dole coordinator. So it's really like a wage subsidy.
With youth unemployment topping 20% in areas such as North Adelaide, Northern Tasmania and Cairns, what else is needed to tackle the problem? And again, here's Eamon Waterford.
The first thing we can do is we can look seriously at the sort of programs that do work. We used to have a program called Youth Connections and another program called Partnership Brokers. These are two programs that were funded by the federal government. They cost about $500 million a year to run, which in the grand scheme of the federal budget is quite a small amount of money. So these were programs that were explicitly targeting young people at risk, getting them back into education, getting them back into training, and getting them into work.
But are there other economic factors at play that no matter how ambitious the program, youth unemployment will continue to rise? Here's Jeff Borland.
Since the global financial crisis in 2008, the rate of unemployment Australia-wide has increased from about 4% to 6.5%. And what happens when the rate of unemployment goes up overall, the group who are always disproportionately adversely affected are young people. That's because, you know, when you have an economic downturn, what happens is employers stop hiring.
Youth unemployment is an issue that will be clearly affected by more than just changes to the Work for the Dole program. There are a complex range of economic and social factors that are at play that make this a really tricky issue. We'll leave John Osborne with the last word.
From little things, big things grow. We've got to remember that. If we take away the first few rungs on the career ladder, we really are doing people a major disservice, because that is a problem that could have consequences that go way into their career.
John Osborne, Director of Economics and Industry Policy at the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, ending that report by Evan Wallace.
On the Money, hedge your bets and stay tuned.
This is On the Money with me, Catherine Zengerer. On the show this week, we're looking at the issue of youth unemployment, with the Bureau of Statistics revealing youth unemployment is the highest it's been since 1998, with one in five 15 to 19-year-olds looking for work. When you go to a self-service checkout, do you ever reminisce about the time when your first job was at a checkout? Or when you order new season clothes online, do you wonder who might have served you if you'd walked into a store? Changes in technology are just one of the reasons behind the struggle to find work for our youth, as Professor Rob Tanton from the National Centre for Social and Economic Modelling explains to On the Money reporter Emma Agostino.
When we look at the latest data from the ABS, which was from January 2015, we see that the youth unemployment is going from about 26% in January 2014 up to about 30% in January 2015. So it's increased by about 4 percentage points. September 2014 was about 28%, so it has been increasing over that time from January 2014 to January 2015.
Why is there an increase in youth unemployment?
So there's possibly a number of reasons. There's an increase in the general rate of unemployment, and what tends to happen is that if unemployment generally is increasing, it means that there's more people in the labour market who are not youth, and an employer is usually looking for somebody who's got some experience in the work, and so that might be contributing to it. The employer would look for somebody, an older person with experience. So that's one thing. Another thing is the rate of technological change has meant that a lot of jobs that young people might be doing are just not available or not around anymore. So if you look at places like Woolworths and Coles nowadays, they will have the self-checkouts, and they'll have about 10 or 15 of those. Now, if you think that 5 or 6 years ago they didn't exist and there would have been 10 or 15 young people possibly working those tills, now people are checking out themselves, and it means that that's 10 or 15 jobs at every single Woolies or Coles store where there isn't that requirement to employ those people.
What are young people doing to try and get work?
What we're seeing is a large increase in the number of young people who are getting university degrees or getting extra qualifications. And so young people are trying to get qualifications. One of the problems with that we're seeing is also that once they've got these qualifications, they're still finding difficulty getting work. One of the interesting things we've seen in the statistics in recent times is the proportion of young people with a degree who are still working as sales assistants. And so they can get a job as a sales assistant while they're going through university. And there's about 7% of people aged 20 to 29 years who are working as sales assistants but not studying. And so they finish their study and they're working as sales assistants. Now, once they get to 30 to 34 years, that drops off significantly. So we think what's happening is that they will work as a sales assistant for a couple of years after they've got their degree, and then they'll eventually start to find work in their field as they move on and get more experience in it.
What are the long-term consequences of youth unemployment?
One of the problems is that if you're out of the labour market for a number of years, then it gets harder and harder to get back into the labour market. And so if you're a youth and you've been unemployed for 3 or 4 years, then you start to lose skills, you start to lose that experience, and again, employers will look at your CV and say, well, why haven't you been working in the last 3 or 4 years? So it makes it harder and harder to get back into the labour force. And that's where you have sort of chronic long-term unemployment. What we tend to find is that it's not such an issue for young people. They'll tend to be able to find a work eventually. And so there is a good news there, that the longer-term unemployment tends to be a problem for middle-aged and older people, who lose a job, get retrenched or something, and then have trouble getting back into a labour force. But long-term unemployment is more an issue for that age group.
Looking to the future, what do you think the Australian workforce will look like for young people?
I think in the future we will have a more skilled workforce for young people, and so young people are really going to need to get skills and qualifications. One thing to think about is it's not just tertiary education, it's also looking at getting other skills and qualifications in a trade or something like that. So plumbing, electricians, or say motor mechanics are all needed in regional Australia. And because of that move from regional Australia into the cities, regional cities and the capital cities, they don't have those young people looking at moving into trades in the regional areas.
Professor Rob Stanton from the National Centre for Social and Economic Modelling, speaking with On the Money reporter Emma Agostino. Continuing our in-depth look at youth unemployment, the government has failed to articulate any kind of plan for jobs in the floundering Australian economy. And Prime Minister Tony Abbott's promise to create 1 million new jobs within 5 years and 2 million new jobs over the next decade is looking increasingly unlikely. Professor Bill Mitchell from the Centre of Full Employment and Equity says the government is blaming the victim rather than addressing the lack of jobs. He spoke with On the Money reporter Emma Agostino.
Well, youth unemployment is high everywhere. Unemployment is high, and unemployment is concentrated in the more disadvantaged areas. Some of the areas in the periphery of our cities are very commonly high unemployment areas. Areas where relatively low-skilled workers live, they tend to suffer high unemployment. So generally around the more disadvantaged areas of our cities are where you'll find high youth unemployment.
Is the issue that they don't have the right training or that jobs just aren't there?
Well, I mean, the overall problem is a lack of jobs. And that's not just confined to the youth unemployment problem. That's the general problem of the Australian economy with respect to employment. There's not enough of it. The problem is that when you have inadequate number of jobs being created relative to the number of people lining up to get them, then the employers start rationing that job queue, and they ration it by ethnicity, English language skills, Indigenous, disability, and age. And ages are bad for youth because they're deemed to be young and inexperienced, and so therefore they're thrown to the back of the queue as well. So then it looks like, then people do studies and it looks like it's a lack of skills causing the problem, but the problem is that there's a lack of jobs, and the lack of jobs then leads these disadvantaged groups to be rationed out of the market.
How has the government responded to the latest youth unemployment figures?
Well, the government hasn't been responding very much at all. The major response, which is has been unacceptable to the Senate, is that they've decided that they'll withdraw the income support for 6 months and throw them into the useless work for the Dole program after that. The government has shown a complete lack of insight and understanding of what the problem is, and has chosen in a very inadequate way to blame the victim of the problem rather than address the problem.
Businesses say that cutting penalty rates will help small business to employ more young people. Do you think this is the way to go?
Cutting penalty rates will just further damage the low income of the workers who earn penalty rates. It probably won't expand employment because there's still got to be spending. Employment's not a function of the cost of the worker, it's a function of what the sales potential of the products that the worker produces are. And there's only so much spending to go around, and if you start hacking into penalty rates, you'll further undermine spending, because of course wages are a source of income as well as a component of employer costs. What they should actually be doing is advocating increasing wages, because then there'll be more spending and they will be able to increase employment.
What can we do to get young people back into work?
Or create more jobs. It's the problem is a lack of jobs. The only way the jobs are created either by private firms if there's sufficient spending to justify the extra work, or they're created by the public sector And of course, we've had a major resistance from our governments to creating work. At the moment, the private sector quite clearly isn't creating enough jobs, and that's why the unemployment rate generally is rising. That's why underemployment is rising. That's why teenagers are in such a plight. So my recommendation, and I'm on the public record for many years arguing that if the private sector won't create enough work, then the only sector left is the government sector, and they should get on their bikes and do it, because we've got a, next week the Treasurer will release the so-called intergenerational report, and this will be saying how our ageing society is going to be a real problem in the future. Well, it certainly will be if we disenfranchise our youth, who are our future workforce, from getting experience and productivity growth into their, productivity capacity. And that should be the urgent concern of government.
What are the long-term impacts on the economy if youth unemployment remains so high?
Well, they're our future workforce. And as I said, that the problem of the ageing society, where there'll be less workers available to support more workers, this so-called rising dependency ratio, will be one of productivity. The future workers are going to have to be more productive than the previous workforce, because there will be less of them supporting more people who aren't working, who will be eating and consuming just as before. So the policy urgency has to be to make sure that everything is done to invest in education, invest in training, and provide jobs so that people can gain essential productivity skills through experience. And the long-term implications of leaving our future workforce outside the paid employment out, and they're dropping out of training, and most training is the most effective training is done in the paid work context. The long-term implications of that are quite poor for all of us, that we will have a society that's less productive than now and not able to provide the same standards of material standards of living that we enjoy now.
Professor Bill Mitchell from the Centre of Full Employment and Equity at the University of Newcastle. He was speaking with Emma Agostino. That's it for On The Money this week. A big thanks to producers Emma Agostino, Evan Wallace and Will Kalouris. We'll be back at the same time next week with our first Monday of the Month panel session. On The Money is podcast in full and can be found online at 2ser.com/onthemoney. So add this asset to your portfolio. I'm Catherine Zengerer. Thanks for your company.